keep supporting the industry. Drink wine. Drink that bottle. The special occasion is today. You're alive. You're healthy.
It's interesting watching these wines that we're making come alive.
But man, this is a really exciting time. We've got technology in ways that we access to it we never had.
The biggest decision in winemaking is when to pick.
Another thing I think about how fortunate the timing was and how we're able to put together what is a very fragile operation from farming all the way to bottling.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 381. This week we feature Delia Villadere of Villadere Vineyards and Winery on Howell Mountain in Napa Valley. For the last few years, Life Between the Vines has brought you original recordings of winemakers from all over the world, majority of those in person. Of course, times are different right now, so for the next few weeks, our programs will be conducted by phone. This week, we feature Delia Villadere of Villadere Vineyards and Winery on Howell Mountain in Napa Valley. Delia was a pleasure to chat with, and above all, she reminds us to enjoy that special bottle today in the very best health. Well, I'm here with Delia Villadere of Villadere Vineyards and Winery in Napa Valley, specifically Howell Mountain. How are you, Delia?
Very good. Thank you very much.
We're talking during extenuating circumstances. As many of our listeners know, we do these normally in person, but this is by phone because, of course, we have the COVID-19 issue right now. So I guess that leads me to my first question with you in the winery. Where are things at for you in terms of how are you communicating with people these days?
Well, like everybody else, electronically, via Zoom, via anything. But most of the cellar workers and most of the vineyard workers are able to work. Our vine rows are conveniently spaced 6 feet apart. So everybody can pick a vine row and be socially distanced immediately. Everybody's working. And we have the tasting room closed, but we put everybody else to do something else.
Mm.
Everybody's displaying different strengths that I didn't know they had.
That's nice.
Yes, that's nice.
Are you doing any type of online tasting at all?
That is my son. He's going to become a virtual taster pro very soon. He's been practicing. It works because he normally is on the shy side, so being in front of the on a computer is a little bit less intimidating than being in front of people. So actually, I think it's going to turn out all right.
It's good. It is our new world. It's our new normal, at least for the time being. Hopefully, we'll be able to get back to being able to come to tasting rooms and enjoy the wine in person. But it's not a bad substitute, all things considered, right?
Right, it's not. And actually, my grandkids are experts that are able to teach me what I do wrong. So,
you know, that's totally perfect. And it's how us more experienced people, as I use that word carefully, learn about technical things on the web, right?
Totally. They live and breathe technical stuff that I had no idea.
No, this is why we have them around. It's good.
Yes, it's good.
Well, you are on Howell Mountain, which is certainly one of the most desirable AVAs in Napa. Fabulous wines and just a wonderful place to visit. Roughly, what altitude are you guys at there?
And that's where we go to the technical explanation. Yes, I am on Howell Mountain. The mountain starts from bottom to the top. I'm at 1,300 feet, and the AVA starts at 1,400 feet. So I can throw a rock to the AVA, but I'm not within the AVA. And that's probably because at the time that the AVA was created, this vineyard was not planted. I started in 84. So that's probably the reason. Other than that, we could be part of it or could have been part of it if I wanted to. It's just that It never occurred to me that I had to pay lawyers to put me in a different place than where I am. I'm still on the mountain and still on Tower Mountain. Above the fog and the soils and everything else is exactly the same, 100 feet from here.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
I never knew that. Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's the only Appalachian that starts at that elevation. And when they created St. Helena Appalachian, they stopped at 400 feet, which is exactly where my vineyard starts.
Well, of course.
Because it drops. It's a very steep drop. Perfect exposure. So I threatened to create my own Appalachian. I would like to be Via Dare from Via Dare, just like Margot from Margot.
I
thought it sounded very good.
Would have had to pay lawyers for that too, I imagine.
Yes, you do, because there is a lot of paperwork that you need to file with TTB and everything else. So I apply the Burgundian philosophy, that is, you know the producer and you like what they do. We've been doing this for more than 35 years. You just go with the name that you trust.
Sure.
And know.
And in the end, you're part of Napa Valley.
Yes.
And overall, that's an important thing to be able to put on your label.
It is an important thing. I think that for many, many, many years, I was selling my wine overseas, and it was complicated to explain Howell Mountain. It wasn't so complicated to explain Napa Valley once Mondavi did a joint venture with Baron Philippe. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew where Napa Valley was. So, and big difference. I remember the days more than 30 years ago that I had to explain that actually there are great wines coming from California, from a region called Napa Valley. And a lot of people, they were not trying to be fictitious. They just didn't know.
Yeah. Come a long way in a very short period of time.
Yes, we have.
Should be very proud of that. There are just some obviously incredible wines coming from Napa in general and many other places.
Yes. But at one time, we weren't as globally renowned as we are today. Today, you mentioned Bordeaux and you mentioned Napa Valley, and people probably don't blink an eye. They know exactly what you're talking about.
So how did you explain that at that time? How did you get people to understand that these are world-class wines?
Very simple. I made them taste the wine.
That works every time, doesn't it?
That works like a charm. And a lot of people, most of my, I went to college in Paris, so my French has a little bit of an accent, but enough to be sometimes not negatively detected. So they would not believe that the wine came from Napa Valley. Hmm. As a matter of fact, they argue.
Really? Wow.
They argue. So a guy actually argued with me that, because I'm not American, therefore the wine is fantastic. And he only drank French wines, of course.
Of course.
And it was a very convoluted argument that I thought, this is ridiculous.
Mm. Absolutely. Now you look back and all the hard work you and your fellow winemakers have done to make this wine from all these areas in the valley so incredibly well respected. And it like you say, it's drinking it is what it's all about, right?
Right. It's where the proof is in the pudding. Actually, we do, yes, we compete, but at the same level. And we have gotten there very, very quick. It's just one generation. So it is indeed a little piece of paradise what we have here.
Absolutely. And I have been fortunate to be there, to go there many, many times. And I'm always grateful when I'm there because it's such a wonderful place to be. The air, the scenery, the wine.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. You're originally from Argentina. Am I correct on that?
Yep. I was born there. Both my parents were European. They met and they had me. I'm first generation.
Oh, wow. So they went from Europe to Argentina.
Yeah.
Interesting.
My grandparents, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay. So how old were you when you left Argentina?
Oh, I left to do postgrad studies, actually. Well, it's a long story, but I went for 12 years to a German boarding school. So I'm as Argentinian as, as you could be.
You're kind of a little bit of everybody.
I'm a little bit of everybody. The good thing is that I do speak fluently in 6 languages, but in reality, I'm a little bit of citizen of the world, if you know what that means.
Oh, yeah. Well, and just looking at your background from what I've read about you, you are a PhD. You went to MIT. You have, other than being a citizen of the world, you have an incredible background. And here you are in the wine business, which is a great place to end up. But what a journey you've been on.
Yes, my father would put it a little bit more succinctly. He used to say, I'm an overeducated farmer, which is true.
Well, I guess that's being better than true. Undereducated.
Yes, especially when he had to pony up for all of my colleges and all of my degrees. So it was interesting. He never thought that my choice was the best choice for his only daughter. He always expected something a little bit more professional than winemaking or being a vintner, which is what I am. I grow the vines and then make the wine. And these days, I even made my winemaker. One of my sons is a winemaker.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Yes. It's what a forethought.
Yeah. Really. You really planned well.
I really planned well. Yeah, no, I'm very proud of my son. He's a very good winemaker.
As you should be. And I think that's a great thing to keep it in the family because, like very well known in Napa, but also in many parts of the world, winemaking is very much a family operation.
Yeah, it's a beautiful industry, and it's kind of that way all over the world. It's like a big family. It's one of the few industries that actually allows you to be really in touch with nature, with the cycles of nature, really be cognizant of what your imprint is and how to make your world a better place for the people that come behind you. My grandkids, great-grandkids, hopefully will inherit something that I left better than when I found it.
Well, what a great place to raise kids. I mean, you really couldn't ask for a better place, could you?
Absolutely. That's one of the main reasons why I could have done anything with all of my degrees, but I do not regret for a second that I raised my kids in a beautiful place and in a way that they all are happy individuals, happy inside, and very balanced, and they all went to do something of themselves. As a mother, that's a job well done.
Yeah, I would say so. And even more so, having your son follow in your footsteps, you know, keeping that in the family, especially as a winemaker, that's really a big deal.
Yeah, he's a very patient man. He has to deal with mom. It's not easy, let me tell you.
I won't go there.
I know it's not.
Well, when you've started a business, when you've created something like that, your hands have been in the dirt as well as in the juice. Pride factor is a big deal, and you want it done the right way, and that's a great way for him to learn, right?
Absolutely. But I'm also a very strict, remember, German school, mm-hmm. German discipline.
Sure, yeah.
So if you're my kid, I won't ask 100% from you. I will ask 300% from you. So it's tough. I'm a tough love mom.
Good for you.
But by the same token, just imagine 25 years old with a little bit of an accent and a little bit over 5 feet tall, and I want it this way. And they say, well, it's never been done that way. Mm. Don't you know that? And I said, this is the way I want it done. If you are not up to the task, I can ask somebody else.
There you go.
And that's how I got things done.
Well, that actually brings me to the question. What led you to decide to be a winemaker?
Well, I wasn't sure I wanted to be a winemaker, per se, but I knew that there was an opportunity. The land was offered to my father as an investment, and the people that offered it to him were going to put a vineyard and put a winery and so on. And I was fresh out of MIT, and I really fell in love with the place. And I said, Dad, if you're going to put all the money, why don't you give me a chance? I can do it. You know, I can run business proposals, and I can figure it out. And he says, you know, after all the money I pour into your education, all you want to become is a farmer. And I said, I can do anything. Mm. And in a way, he knew that about me. If I put my mind to it, I will. And this was an opportunity to raise the children. I was a single mom. I still am. And raise the children in a perfect place and having them with me 24/7. So, yes, I put my proposals until I managed to convince him to get me the seed money, because at that time, nobody will lend you to start a vineyard. Absolutely nobody.
Yeah.
And so I made a proposal that was amenable to him, especially he would lend me the seed money, but I had to give him an expiration date. He wanted to know, when do I come off the note? Mm. And I think that I'm today in business thanks to that initial planning. He was very strict with approving and not approving and how much money I was going to spend and doing what and when was I going to go to market and what was I planning to do. So I had to compliment. I had good business skills, but I didn't know anything about winemaking. So I sought out the best consultants in the world. And, of course, I brought a vineyard manager from New Zealand that worked with my vineyard manager here, and I brought consultants from France that were very good friends, very good winemakers in consulting as to should I plant this variety or this variety or this other variety, and that's how we ended up planting up and down the hill, non-terrace, with a perfect west exposure or east-west exposure, a combination of Burgundian and Bordeaux ideas that applicable to this specific site. We would sit down and wait for the wind to pick up just to see where it was coming from, at what time, and what would be the best orientation of the vine rows. To this day, it works because I don't need anything to protect me from mildew or to protect me from frost.
Hmm.
Mother Nature does it. It's my big ventilator. My big fan. So,
just a curious question, not to interrupt you for a second, but the planning of your vineyard, how long of a period to plan where you wanted to go? Because since you had very strong ideas of what you wanted to do, how long did that take?
Oh, about 3 years.
Wow.
I'm hard to convince. And by the same token, I was going to UC Davis just to make sure that whatever I was told was really the best possibility and the latest of the latest. I've always had a very inquisitive mind, so a double, triple check.
How many acres are you farming?
I'm farming about 28 out of 92.
Nice.
But a very, very close spacing, 6x4 and some other areas, 5x4.
Mm-hmm.
In a 32-degree angle.
Now, I know you're growing Cabernet Franc, and obviously Cabernet Sauvignon, because obviously Cabernet is king in Napa Valley. What else are you growing, if anything?
Oh, I'm growing Petit Verdot right in front of my house, and the poor vines look always at the end of their life, clamoring for some water.
Mm.
And I say so because I see them every day,
yeah.
And they're always kind of begging. it looks to me. And I also have a little bit of Malbec. I sent my son for several internships in different wineries all over the world, but one that he particularly liked was a Charles Ferrer in Mendoza, and he fell in love with Malbec, so there we have a little corner of the vineyard with Malbec brought from Argentina. It took us about 12 years to get a really good, significant crop that was worth adding to something. And then we planted Syrah because I wanted to have an experiment. I have a kind of southwest facing slope, and I wanted to call it my court roti in a way. Mm. So I planted a Barossa Valley clone and an Hermitage clone. Mm. And I wanted to see in the same rootstock, the same soil, what would happen. And actually, the experiment proved very illustrative why people think that Syrah and Shiraz are two different grapes when they're not. Mm. Because they do behave like if they were two different grapes. At one point, after about 8 years, we were harvesting Syrah probably about almost 2 weeks ahead of the Shiraz.
Really? Wow.
In terms of vegetative cycle, they had diversified themselves according to their clone. And they do behave very differently. Mm. One being very, very, your typical Syrah, very aromatic and pleasant, almost bacon kind of earthy tones. And the other one behaving almost like a very deep garnet, kind of a very, very good complement for Cabernet Sauvignon. And we use it for the black label because it makes it really black ink.
So primarily you're blending that grape then?
Yes, we love to blend. I think that making a cake out of one ingredient, it's not fun. Mm. It's a lot easier to keep consistency to blend every year because you blend the best of the best of the season.
Sure, which just completely makes sense. You've obviously been in this business for a very good length of time, and you've, I'm sure, done plenty of interviews in your life. But what is the one question that you don't get asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, that's difficult because I've been asked about everything and anything. I don't know. I'm a philosopher at heart, so I'm always questioning myself many things. It's the perfect combination with a really good glass of wine. You can actually solve all the problems of the world. So there isn't really a question that I have not been asked and that I would like to be asked, but it is good to be a farmer and to have the long-term vision, I think particularly today. It seems like the world is coming to an end today, and you have to look past that. You have to look long-term. And for me, spring always comes at the end of a harsh winter. So just keep your long-term view, even when things do not look that way, that great. Mm-hmm. I've been through fires and earthquakes and COVID-19, and I will continue. And even when I'm just nothing at all, maybe just a memory, there will be a bottle of Yadera that somebody opens up and just say, hey, this is great wine.
That's a great answer. Very good. Yeah, every winemaker has been through extraordinary times out there, and I commend all of you for what you've done to survive in difficult times. Let's hope that things go up from here. Optimism is at its greatest need right now.
Yes.
So kind of along the same lines, is there one central thing you've learned as a winemaker, as a vintner, that really is a cardinal rule for you?
Be patient. And that's such a hard lesson for me. I want things yesterday, and it's not possible. Every day, you have to learn to be patient. Sometimes, as I call my wines, are not showing well, or not the way I expected them to show. And it's interesting to see how they change and evolve. And I was concerned about my 1993, and since we're trying to keep the optimism at the office, every now and then I bring a bottle of one of the older vintages and see how it's faring. And I opened a 93, which happens to be the year that my youngest son was born. And we said, okay, who aged better, the 93 in the bottle or Alex?
Nice.
And despite 93 not being a fantastic vintage, on the contrary, it was very difficult. The wine in the bottle had turned around, and it was really plush and actually sweet. And not at all like I expected. I expected for it to be a little bit more herbal, more like Bordeaux-ish, traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't at all. It was an incredibly pleasant wine. So patience, patience, patience. I don't know that anybody will ever have the patience to wait 27 years for a wine to come around.
Yeah.
It's possible. It's possible that with patience, things come around.
I think it's the same thing when you open any bottle and you're waiting, you know, you're having a conversation, and then all of a sudden you look at the person you're with and you say, hey, wow, this has changed. And how that affects you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And isn't that a great discovery? I think with any wine, whether you think you caught it at the peak, I love wine for that reason. I think it's a conversation. It's with nature. It's a conversation with what happened that season. You can see it in every bottle. You can see this one had a lot of sun. This one had perhaps too much rain or too much this, but it speaks to you. It tells you something about that season. All the toil and all the work that went into putting it inside that bottle.
It is. It's truly remarkable to have that experience. I think when you get to sit down and drink with people, especially people who are not big wine drinkers who are learning, to let them have that experience with you is a thrill, isn't it?
Yes, it is. First, because I love the first impressions. I get a lot of good feedback from first impressions. It's learning is just a way of putting it, but I don't think that you need to learn anything about wine drinking. It's either you like it or you dislike it, and that's all you need to know. It's like trying to be Pavarotti or Andrea Bocelli when you're singing in the shower. Everybody can sing.
Sure.
So everybody can drink wine and enjoy wine. You don't have to be a winemaker or a wine critic to understand wine. No, you have to, I like it. This is good. It goes with my food. I enjoy it. That's all you need to know.
That's very well said. It is important to understand that the wine business is an industry, and many people make their living from it. That also affects hospitality, hotels, restaurants.
Absolutely.
And right now is a real important time. So many winemakers are offering great deals on wines, and now's a good time to buy. Now's a good time to support your favorite winery, and more importantly, try other wineries too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Just open that bottle, drink it, enjoy it. Think of all the work that went into it, into making it. We all are grateful for the support.
Well, we're grateful for your wine. I know that you do tastings, but that's by appointment exclusively, correct?
Yes, but now we have opened up the website so you can go and taste whatever you want, or you can call. if you want to go more in depth as to what each blend is about. Viognier is always a blend of Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon. Always very high proportion of Cabernet Franc because I'm a big proponent of Cabernet Franc. To me, it's a little bit more feminine, a little bit more elegant, a little bit less in your face.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wine that whispers rather than scream at you with tannin. So that's Viognier, our top cuvée. And then we have Black Label. That is something that my son came up with. And he decided to put Syrah in it. And that's why we call it Black Label. It has Syrah, Cabernet, and a little bit of Cab Franc, and a little bit of Malbec in it. That kind of is that pinch of salt that keeps everything together.
Mm.
It really has a little bit more savory. It's very, very popular. I call it almost the next gen because it's very, very popular with the young generation. And it's a very versatile wine.
Mm.
And then, of course, we have the Dare Cabernet Franc. So it's 100% Cabernet Franc.
Oh, that's lovely. I am a big Cab Franc fan. I think it's a wine more people need to drink. For our listeners who would like to learn more about you, what is your website?
www.viadere, that is V like in Victor, IADER.com.
Great. Delia, this was a total pleasure to be able to talk to you today. I really appreciate you taking the time during crazy times.
I'm a little bit crazy myself.
Delia, you take good care. Please stay safe and stay healthy.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Learn more by visiting viadere.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2020.